Izamit Carr, and I'm Telly Concepcion, and together we are Beyond the Numbers Podcast. We go beyond the numbers of sports and life to bring you the story within the story of the stories that matter. So come learn, grow, and have some fun with us. We are Beyond the Numbers Podcast.
On today's episode, the guys discuss family reunions in the NBA bubble, the rules regarding visitors, and the impact on mental health. They also recap the epic battles we've gotten to witness these playoffs, and follow up on their conversation from last week with the resolutions brought forth following the NBA walkout. But first, their numbers of the day.
My number of the day is 23. We have a lot of new folks tuning into the podcast, and we want to welcome you to Beyond the Numbers Podcast, and thank you, especially if you listened to our last episode, BTN 23. It was an unorthodox episode. It was a deep conversation Ahmed and I shared, and we wanted to share the conversation and the sentiment with you guys as well. So thank you for listening. Thank you for taking the time. We appreciate you, and we hope that you'll stick around.
My number of the day is 20, as in 20%. During the players' meeting that took place during the boycott before the restart of the playoffs, it was revealed that only 20% approximately of NBA players are registered to vote. So Chris Paul and other team leaders are working to make sure that all players are registered properly in their home states. Because if they're going to be activists, they got to start at home.
Exactly right. Make sure to vote.
Before the business. Beyonders, it's time for Before the Business, where we answer your unanswered questions and find the numbers that went unfound in previous episodes.
So in BTN 12, we discussed Colin Kaepernick's right to protest and the division and outrage it caused throughout America. Well, this week in soccer and MLS and the national anthem, Dallas was playing KC after being booed and having objects thrown at them by their own fans for taking a knee in protest of police brutality and systemic racism as the national anthem played before FC Dallas's game against Nashville SC last week. FCD's players declared their intention to stay in the locker room for the pregame ceremony during Sunday night's rematch, which took place in Frisco, Texas. Quote, in consultation with our players and MLS, we have collectively decided to play the national anthem before the players take the field for tonight's match against Nashville SC. FC Dallas said in a statement. It added that there would also be a moment of silence before the game for, quote, for the players, coaches, and all in attendance to promote racial equality. What's crazy to me about this story, Ahmed, is that the MLS and all the MLS teams and the MLS Player Association, they all agreed to take a knee before the games. For fans to go to the games and throw things at them blows in the face of what this country is about, which is your right to protest, whether you agree or not. And also, what everything has been about these last few weeks, including the guys in the NBA bubble, and shows how little change has happened during that time, which is crazy and sad.
There's two pieces of this to me. And the first part is, I mean, you want to lean, you want to kneel, you want to stand. I think we have to respect both options, right? And I don't think that someone standing is not supporting. But to your point, I agree. Like, the whole point is peaceful protest, right? But it's, you're not protesting the way we're comfortable. So that's where the anger comes from.
And if this upset you so much to throw things on the field, like, come on, that's got to be someone who's upset at the message, not the way the message is being presented, in my opinion.
Well, normally the only acceptable protest is one that no one has to pay attention to. Yeah, that protest's fine as long as I don't have to deal with it, see it, hear it, you know, talk about it. So we'll see how this plays out. When we look back to BTN 1, first episode, Telly, we talked about the Houston Astros and how they will be paying for their sins this season. We've definitely gotten out easy so far with no fans in the stands, But the players, Telly, the players have not forgotten.
Baseball players are like elephants. They don't forget anything. I say that.
You know, we talk about basketball players marking days on calendars. Man, when that baseball schedule comes out, they know exactly who they're playing. They got those days marked on the calendar. They know when they're going to be facing who and who's pitching, all that kind of stuff. So it's definitely something that all the players have been talking about significantly. We saw Joe Kelly get ejected. He was suspended for 8 games initially for not hitting, but throwing at, right? He didn't hit him. He threw at them.
Can I ask a question on it?
Go for it.
Okay, how many games were any of the Houston Astros players suspended for their involvement with sign stealing, which led to a World Series win?
Zero.
Okay.
The 27 Astros. The 27 Astros faced no penalties. And in fact, that was part of their deal. Commissioner Rob Manfred said, if you tell me the truth, you won't get in trouble. But I need to hear all the truth. So all the players came out and said, we did this. And he said, all right, cool. And moved on. And of course, they had some monetary fines and some draft picks and all of that. But players themselves, nothing. So Joe Kelly gets suspended. And Joe Kelly is not quiet about it, right? So he's all over the blogs, he's all over the radio, he's on different podcasts, and his issue is the only people from the Astros organization that really got in trouble for the cheating, using technology, the illegal sign stealing, was the manager and the general manager. When you think about it, for this whole thing to happen, it was the players that had to put it together. And so Kelly's anger is, why is it that only the manager, only the coach, they have been sort of the fall guys in this situation when this was a player-run situation? This had to have been created by the players, promoted by the players, and coordinated by the players for it to work. And so that's where he's been angry. And we've seen other guys across the league start to go after Astros hitters.
So yeah, and then Kristen in San Jose has been watching a lot of baseball, and she actually reached out and asked about Fernando Tatis and why this 3-0 thing is such a big deal. We keep seeing in the headlines, Fernando Tatis and 3-0.
In BTN 14, we discussed baseball and some of the changes it would make to let the boys play. And this was a big thing that happened last year, and actually MLB ran with this in the postseason, but that was specifically aimed at bat flips, anything that dealt with home runs, those types of things, and they wanted it to be a let the boys play moment.
It's basically a classic example of not letting the boys play, because the coach got upset because he swung at a 3-0 pitch, 3 balls, 0 strikes, which usually don't swing at, but Ahmed, how can you be mad at the result? It was a grand slam. If you don't want them to hit it, don't throw sauce up there. You know, throw a pitch.
This is an interesting situation because this pitcher, he walked him loaded. 3-0 pitch, he threw up a meatball. At the end of the day, and I have to agree with David Price, if you don't like the outcome, throw a better pitch. And that has to be the way it is, right? Because at the end of the day, these guys all get paid off the numbers that they make, right? So he's getting paid off of his home run numbers, his batting average, his performance, right? And no one, no team, no manager, no general manager, when they're sitting at the negotiation table, is looking at those numbers and saying, hey, those 2 home runs, those were on in the 8th inning and blowouts. Those don't count. Those shouldn't have happened, right?
Can I take it a step further?
Yes, sir.
For pay? For the fans. We want to watch games. We want to watch you hit. That's what we pay for, entertainment. We don't pay to watch a guy stand up there and be like, oh, this pitcher sucks. Let me just walk so he'll be okay.
And you know, the funnier part of this to me, right? So a 3-0 grand slam, 8th inning. They're already up by 7 at the time, I think. His father, Fernando Tatis Sr., hit 2 grand slams in the same inning, Telly. Yep. Not in a game, not at the end of a blowout, in the same inning.
Called Platano Power.
April 23rd, 1999, 3rd inning of a game, the Cardinals scored 11 runs, 8 of those were Tatis Grand Slams. Insane.
Dominicanos.
Insane. In a similar conversation about letting the boys play, we saw Zach Greinke earlier this week calling out his pitches to his catcher. It's interesting because I think a lot of people said, hey, this is him kind of saying, hey, even if you know what pitch is coming, you can't hit it. The real reason behind this is he was having communication issues with his catcher, and it was taking too long to get to the pitch that he wanted to get to. So he just started calling him himself.
Try to hit this.
But for what it's worth, Greinke is incredible to be able to call his pitches, do all of that, and still have guys miss.
Yeah, and another ridiculous baseball story this week. I mean, I got to file this one under ridiculous. 41. I almost made this my number of the day, but I didn't. But 41, Amit. 41 rental cars to drive to get to a game. Like, come on. They couldn't share. They couldn't save the planet. They couldn't double up in the car. 41 rental cars to drive to get to their game. And these are professionals we're talking about. Professional baseball team, professional baseball players trying to social distance in the car. But I'll tell you another thing, Amit. I watched the Rays and the Yankees this week. I watched the Yankees and the Red Sox this week. I watched a couple games. You know what I saw a lot of? Spitting. I saw a lot of spitting. Ain't nobody paying attention to these guys not spitting. We talked about a couple episodes ago, the MLB didn't want these guys to spit, and they were going to pull them aside and tell them, hey, you can't spit because there's a virus going around. And, you know, the camera has been zooming in, showing guys spit during at-bats, in the outfield, at shortstop, at second base.
I mean, it's one thing to do it in the outfield when you're out in the middle of nowhere, but you see guys running bases, doing all that kind of stuff. Look, it's instinctual for these guys. It's going to be hard to change. Now, if you mandate masks, that could get rid of part of it. Nobody's spitting in the mask.
But so, yeah, to me, it just made no sense. 41 rental cars so we can social distance, but as soon as we get to the ballpark, we can high-five and spit and do all of that. So what's the point of the 41 cars? That's all I'm saying. In BTN 16, we talked about Patrick Mahomes getting paid. We gave him a new nickname. We call him Money Mahomes. Patrick Money Mahomes got paid. But we also told you how money in the NFL is not guaranteed. Gerald McCoy, Amit, one of my favorites. He was a Buccaneer for a long time. Tore his ACL one day, and the next day, I think a few hours later, the Cowboys released him. They just let him go. No money for that. And he's going to have season-ending surgery on his ruptured right quadriceps tendon on Tuesday. And he'll save $3.25 million in 2020. So this move saves the Cowboys that money. It doesn't keep Gerald McCoy from re-signing with the Cowboys when he gets healthy. And thank goodness, this isn't always the case in the NFL. There was an injury waiver as part of the agreement on the 3-year, $18 million deal that he signed because he had chronic tendonitis in his right knee and quadriceps. So he'll actually be able to keep his $3 million signing bonus, but his $2.5 million base salary will come off the books, as does his $750,000 roster bonus. He was also scheduled to make $5 million in 2021 with a $1.5 million guaranteed at the time of signing. Another $5.25 million in 2022 with $750,000 in roster bonuses each season, all wiped out. So an $18 million contract, Amit, becomes a $3 million contract because of injury. Again, this does not happen in baseball. This does not happen in basketball. When those guys get hurt, they still get paid.
It's a different game. And talking about getting paid, there are two tight ends in the league, Telly, that got paid.
I think there's more than two tight ends. You know, they work out a lot. I was squatting a lot when I played football, so, you know.
Get out of here. Get out of here with that. George Kittle and Travis. You know what? George Kittle and Travis Kelce got big deals on the same day, man. According to ESPN, Kelce agreed to a 4-year, $57.25 million deal that features almost $25 million in guaranteed money. His average annual value is slightly less than Kittle's five-year deal at $75 million, but both contracts are for millions more than anyone else in the position right now. These two guys are the premier tight ends in the league, and they have been shown the money.
They have been shown the money. And a couple of fun facts here. George Kittle signed first, and he was the highest paid for a hot minute before Travis Kelce, like literally an hour after. Second, they're the two tight ends that you saw in this year's Super Bowl playing for the Kansas City Chiefs and playing for the San Francisco 49ers. And third, these dudes are like best friends off the field. They are like best friends. They're thick as thieves. They're hanging out at the Super Bowl. So congrats for them getting paid and excelling at their position and showing people how it's done. In another weird twist, somehow, this was kind of strange. You know, it's one of my old teammates, an old Florida Gator, Joe Hayden, my boy, had beef with Pac-Man Jones, ? Now, this was weird. It was resolved. It made our list, but we're going to have you Google it for more details if you want more details on this story. Now, Ahmed, I want to turn to presidents. You know, it's an election year. You know, I want to talk about presidents. Do you know who our last president was, Ahmed?
It's been a while, man. It's felt like a decade since we had another president.
It does. You know, that man with the swag who was president for a while. But we want to talk about a couple other presidents. So in all seriousness, Masai Ujiri, president of the Toronto Raptors, the NBA champion Toronto Raptors, was shoved following Game 6 with the Golden State Warriors. And the officer that shoved him accused him of stepping up to him with ill motive, evil intent, and turned around and sued him for emotional distress. Well, video came out this week, Ahmed, that exonerates Masai Ujiri and proves that the cop was actually the provocateur. So we're glad that he was exonerated, and we're glad there's video evidence to clean his name. But it just goes to show that no matter how high up you are, how high a position you have, how nice a suit you wear, even in the NBA Finals, when you're the head of a team, you can still get pushed by the police. You're still a black man in America. Turning to another black president, Jason Wright, congratulations to Jason Wright, was just hired as the NFL's first black president. Think about that. We had a real U.S. president in the United States of America, a real first black U.S. president before the NFL got one. And I just feel bad because I feel like they're throwing my man into a dumpster fire. It's with the Washington team. They don't even have a name. They got the worst owner in all of sports.
They do not have the worst owner in all of sports. They do not have the worst owner in all of sports.
Well, him and Dolan go on picnics together, so you can lump them in the same category. Pretty much a bad. But what I feel most bad about, and he's a McKenzie guy. He played running back in the league for a number of years. But he now has to perform for the future of all minorities in a role like that. And that's a pressure-packed position to be in, the same one that President Barack Obama found himself in, the same one many minorities find themselves in, but the NFL said they have a magnifying glass on this situation to monitor it. So I don't envy him getting this spot and on a team that doesn't even have a name.
Telly, you know the story. When you're the first, you got to be the best. You just can't be any guy. You have to be the best guy. So
best of luck.
Best of luck to you, Jason Wright.
And this also shows, Ahmed, we'll end it here, how important it is to vote. So Beyonders, please, we cannot stress enough, make sure you're registered, make sure everything is correct so you can get out to vote. LeBron James has teamed up with Patrick Mahomes now for More Than a Vote. There's a long list of high-profile athletes and entertainers that just announced that they're a part of this. Getting more African Americans to the polls and showcasing a light on voter suppression, which is taking place all over this country. I'll leave it with this list. It's a pretty amazing list. Odell Beckham Jr., Eric Bledsoe, Tony Braxton, Ahmed, Bun B, Caron Butler, Mike Evans, Draymond Green, Brittany Griner, Kevin Hart, okay. Udonis Haslam,
Andrew Hawkins, Jason Hayward, MLB, DeAndre Hopkins, NFL, Alvin Kamara, NFL, Damian Lillard, Dame Time, Kyle Lowry, CJ McCollum, Kendrick Perkins, David Price, Jalen Rose, your boy, your brother, CC Sabathia on there, Ben Simmons, Sloane Stephens, Marcus Stroman, Maria Taylor, Christy Tolliver, Mike Vick, Bobby Wagner, Aja Wilson, and Trey Young, to name a few. That's how important this is. It has united all of these athletes. Please be sure to get out. It is more than a vote. Now let's get back to the business. So, Amit, it's time for our new segment, News from the NBA Bubble.
Bubble news.
Yeah. Bubble news. So, last week, we had a very special show in which we talked about the shooting of Jacob Blake and the NBA turning the sports world on its ear in order to support the cause. And we talked about the sports world reaction to it. But we do not want to forget to honor some tremendous players and performances from inside the NBA bubble. But first, Amit, family and guests are now allowed inside of Disney World at the Wide World of Sports inside the NBA bubble.
That is correct. Families began arriving in the Orlando area last week so they could quarantine before being permitted into the bubble. And once they're inside, they're going to be subjected to the same daily testing and mandatory wearing of masks as all the Tier 1 players, personnel, and staff. They will not be allowed to leave campus, so that could make it tough on children who may get bored inside the bubble, although you're stuck at Disney, Telly. How bored are you going to get?
Yeah, and you should, and regular wings. No barbecue, lemon pepper. But as long as you want regular wings, I'm pretty sure
that's true.
The cooking staff at Disney can hook it up.
So, fun story. The Lakers were actually set to meet with members of their families after practice. Danny Green said last week that his fiance had actually traveled to Florida, but he kind of stated that he wished his dog could make it. But unfortunately, no pets allowed in the bubble, Telly.
Yeah, but no pets are family members for some folks, so that's a bummer.
But in most cases, players are limited to 4 guests total. That would also get 1 ticket authorizing the entry for 1 adult who could then hold a child 2'8" or shorter to each of the games. So, essentially, if you have family at the bubble there to watch you, you can allow 1 adult who then has to hold their child who has to be shorter than 2'8".
Here's my question. A lot of the wording in the manual was based on height. These are NBA players. These are not average sized human beings. How old is a 2'8" child? What if they have a 2-year-old that's like 4 feet tall? Like, what do you do? Like, he can't take care of himself. He can ride the rides there, but I don't think he's emotionally mature enough to be riding the rides around Disney. Like, come on.
Height is an interesting differentiator when it comes to this specific group of people. I don't get it. I don't understand why they wouldn't go by age rather than height, but
And it's crazy because even though they're allowed to bring families into the bubble, not everyone is choosing to do that, right?
So not all players are planning to bring families, and some have children who are just beginning the school year, and they don't want to pull them out of that and into this virtual classroom bubble situation. Family members who are quarantined at home and then travel privately face only a 4-day quarantine versus those who are coming in and quarantining at Disney.
So basically, if you got the funds and you got a PJ, you good for 4 days. But if you got to fly in a commercial, you got to quarantine
7 days.
So
that's the difference.
That's what that comes down to. Like LeBron and the guys that can afford a private jet for the family, 4 days. If you fly a commercial, 7 days.
I'd also like to point out before we move on that the NBA has sent out a memo to everyone inside the bubble that if you're at the games, you must respect the officials. You got to keep your voice down. No disrespecting any of the official members there. And careful what you say, because This is a closed environment and TV cameras pick up everything. And there have been isolated incidents across the league where they've caught various, whether it's executives, players, kind of bad-mouthing referees and bad-mouthing officials in general. So there was a memo that went out today, especially with family members in, that, hey, best behavior, because everyone can hear you.
Yeah, and while we're talking about officials, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, like, giving a shout-out to the officials right here, because when the players boycotted last week, the officials did as well. And they were wearing Black Lives Matter t-shirts, and they actually marched all around the campus there at Disney to highlight the inequities that we're facing and that the players had taken a boycott from. So they also boycotted the league. They were also trying to make their voices heard. I know we give officials a lot of grief, but thank you, officials. Shouts out to the officials for doing that. They usually go unnoticed, but they were in there protesting as well for equality.
Hey, if they do their job right, they're going to go through unnoticed. Because you and I both know, when you start noticing the refs, there's a problem in the game.
Yeah. So, Ahmed, we got to talk about it. 8/24 was Kobe Day. And obviously, Kobe looms large over the league. This is the first playoffs, you know, without Kobe, who is a larger-than-life figure for the NBA. And what's crazy is that the Lakers played on 8/24, Kobe Day. They were wearing Black Mamba uniforms. And at one point in the game, at the beginning, the Lakers were winning 24-8. And it ended up being a blowout win for them. I think it's safe to say that Kobe was looking down on them and looking over that game for sure. And it was pretty much over when they decided they were going to wear the Black Mamba uniforms for me on 8/24, no matter what the Blazers did that game.
That was surreal to watch. That whole beginning, they were in a whole different plane of playing. It was insane, especially how close that series had been up until that point.
And with everything going on, you know, the loss of Kobe, the shooting of Jacob Blake, there's been a lot of guys in the bubble. And the question that we never ask, and we don't ask enough, you know, we expect athletes to be machines, not human, otherworldly. And although they have special skills that they can perform with, you know, they're also human. And Paul George came out this week, right, Ahmed, and talked about a little bit of what he was experiencing in the bubble.
Yeah, you know, Paul George is one of many NBA players who have spoken about mental health issues. I think mental health was a pretty big deal, even in the 2019 season. I know there was a lot that had come out, and I know Kevin Love was a big proponent of talking about it, having conversations about it, kind of opening up about his own experiences. But Paul George really talked about how, you know, the various issues that guys face and people in general face when it comes to mental health issues are in many ways amplified in the bubble, because you are kind of locked in. You're either playing basketball or you're watching other games or you're watching social media. And I think it was Danny Green that said, you know, the bubble is as good to you as you play. So if you're playing well, the bubble's great, right? Everyone's cheering you on. You hear it, you feel it. If you're not doing well, everything's amplified because of what social media is doing out there and all the criticisms that come down and all the people out there trying to put you down. So I know that Paul George had, you know, some very serious mental health situations going on. You know, he was depressed, he had anxiety, he was definitely struggling, but it's nice to hear that the NBA has a pretty solid brotherhood there. Plenty of guys looking out for each other, understand that this is real. Especially, you know, you and I had talked about this in the African-American community and the Black community. Mental health issues aren't always looked upon in a positive way. You kind of see this. Or acknowledged. Agreed. Your point, Telly, it comes from sort of an old school thinking. But good to see that there's support.
Yeah, I think the families being in the bubble will help now too, because you get that unconditional love from your family, your significant other, your kids, right? So I think the guys are used to going home and getting love, whether they score 30 or whether they score 3 points. You know, their kids are still going to run up to them, give them a big hug and welcome them home, and you still feel like you're a productive member of society. But being in the bubble, like you said, as a basketball player or bust, you don't really have that validation or that support in there. So, you know, good to see the families are there, and hopefully the guys are being uplifted by their family and friends now able to join them inside the bubble. So we had a Beyonder, Matt in Tampa. Shouts out to Matt in Tampa. Reached out and he said, what, the Celtics get no love? He's originally from New Hampshire. That's his team. So Matt, okay, Matt, here, we're giving the Celtics some love. The Celtics swept the 76ers, got the 76ers coach fired, is leading to the breakup possibly of Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. And they were actually the first team to advance to the second round of the bubble playoffs. So huge congrats to the Celtics. They're now up 2-0 on the defending champs, the Raptors, who are looking unbeatable. And we actually talked about this a couple weeks ago as a sleeper pick to win the finals. And the Celtics are out here making them look like nothing really, Ahmed.
Kemba Walker has been on some sort of tear. He's been looking great. I think that the Celtics have some players. They've got some guys that can really play. And it's been fun to watch. I was surprised, but they've definitely come, they've shown up to play. And to your point, I think they may knock out the defending champs.
Yeah, and Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, I mean, those dudes are beasts. You know, they have the eye of the tiger. They get after. They're not shy. They're not scared of the moment. I think that's the difference, right? You have two alpha dogs, guys that can turn it on and create offense at any moment, and that makes them a dangerous team. And I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a Celtics-Lakers final for the 50th time in NBA history. It comes down to the Lakers and the Celtics again. We'll have to see how it plays out because the Heat are looking pretty good too. And as soon as the Heat bounce Giannis, Ahmed, I'm telling you, Giannis to the Warriors. I'm saying Curry to Giannis, Curry to Clay, Clay to Giannis. I'm just saying, Giannis,
we cannot wait. Picking up steam.
Till you come out here.
Picking up steam.
I'm going to take you to have some Greek, whatever you want to eat on me when you get out here. We get to watch you play at the Chase Center. I'm excited for it. Speaking of beasts, Ahmed, we talked about him 2 weeks ago. We talked about him on BTN 22. Luka, the beast, with a 45-point triple-double game-winning dagger shot. The youngest in NBA history to win a game in the final seconds as the clock expired. He did it on a bum ankle. He scored 45 points. And we told you that Luka is a beast. He single-handedly, Ahmed, with no Kristaps Porzingis. Name another guy who plays on the Dallas Mavericks team right now. Name one guy. Name two more guys. He single-handedly helped them beat the Clippers twice. They could have been up 2 or 3-0 if Porzingis doesn't get ejected in game one and doesn't get hurt. But the Clippers advance, and we got to see just how special Luka is, and there's many more to come from Luka. So we're excited. We can't wait.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens with Porzingis, just because looks like that knee's hurt again. So I know we talked about, you know, Luka and Porzingis really bringing it for the Mavs, but we'll see this offseason how that all plays out and how his knees shape up.
Talk about the rich get richer, man. Look at the West. Look at the West, the Western Conference of the NBA. Man. I mean, you got Luka. You got all the young talent seems to be in the West, man. Not to take anything away from the East, because you got the Heat, our young team.
The Celtics are good. Teams
coming up in the East. The Celtics are great, but it ain't like the West, man. It ain't like the West. You got the old stars, and you got two guys we're about to talk to, because this Jazz and Nuggets series was phenomenal.
What an insane
phenomenal,
series.
Phenomenal basketball on both sides. I had no dog in this fight. That's what makes these games a series fun to watch, because I had no dog in this fight. This was just a fun series to watch and observe from the sidelines. Through six games, Ahmed, both teams are scored more than 120 points per 100 possessions. Just to put that in perspective, the Dallas Mavericks put up the best scoring efficiency in NBA history this season at 115.9 per 100 possessions. And obviously, Ahmed, they ran out of gas for game seven because the game ended. Yep. And it's 80-78. I believe it was 80-78 that the game ended. So they definitely ran out of gas.
all four 50-point games from this postseason have come from Donovan Mitchell and Jamal Murray in this series. And according to your old stomping grounds, I'm Elias Sports Bureau, the duel between Murray and Mitchell that saw them score more than 40 points apiece twice this series marks the first time that a pair of opposing players have done that multiple times in a playoff series. Also, they are only 23 years old. That's what I'm talking about. The West got Luka, you got Donovan Mitchell, you got Jamal Murray coming up, you got LeBron, you got AD, you got Kawhi, you got Klay and Steph. You're going to have Giannis soon. I mean, it's all of the best is in the West right now. And I'm, you know, I'm an East Coast guy. So it pains me to say that, you know, I'm an East Coast guy, but it looks like things are swinging West. And what's crazy to me is that that's the first time a pair of opposing players have done that. Magic and Bird playing against each other back in the day. Charles Barkley versus Jordan back in the day. Karl Malone and Michael Jordan back in the day. Patrick Ewing Jordan. I mean, I'm thinking through series from my time and a little before that, and I can't believe that opposing players hadn't scored multiple times in a series like that before.
The matchup between Mitchell and Murray was crazy. They went shot for shot, giving us probably, you know, we talked about this during the game, probably one of the greatest one-on-one duels in playoff history, even though the two rarely guarded each other. Mitchell posted 36.2 points per game on a 53% shooting, including 51.5% from deep and 95% from the line. He was the first player in history to post at least 35, 50, 50, and 90 in those categories for an entire playoff run.
That's insane. Crazy. Jamal Murray threw six NBA playoff games all against the Utah Jazz. He's averaging 34 points. He put up 50, then 42, then 50 again. The last two were in season-saving wins as they were on the brink of elimination. And he single-handedly willed the Nuggets to become the first team since that year I don't talk about, in that series I don't talk about, when a team from Cleveland beat some other team that was down in a 3-1 deficit. And we're so thankful. Thank you, Denver Nuggets, that won't be referenced as much anymore. Jamal Murray hit 72% at the rim, 61% on long twos, 57% from three, which is insane. Denver is plus 21 in the 225 minutes he's on the floor. They're a minus 47 in the 68 minutes he got rest.
That's crazy. And,
which is just astounding. He averaged 31.5 points on the series from 55% shooting, 55% from deep, 92 from the line. What we're trying to say here is that both of these guys are spectacular for many years to come because, as we stated, they are both 23 years old. Both Murray and Donovan have been shooting 50, 55, and 90 in the postseason. Murray is 58.7 from the field, 57.4 from three, 91.3 free throws. Donovan, 54.9 field goals, 55.4% from three, and 94.6% free throws. And the postseason has seen four 50-point games. As we said, all four have come from these guys two apiece. The 142 points Murray scored in games four through six is the third highest total in three consecutive playoff games in NBA history, trailing only the logo, Jerry West in 1965, and Michael Jeffrey Jordan in 1988, which we talked to you guys about in BTN4. Between the two of them, Amit, Mitchell and Murray, are you ready for this? Scored the most points in a series of all time, 475 points in this series, Jesus. The most by opposing players in a single series in NBA history, which topped Jerry West and John Havlicek that scored 463 in 1969 in the finals. So just ridiculous. And these guys, it was great to see them embrace after the game last night. Murray went up to Donovan
And obviously we're recording this on Wednesday, but Murray went up to Donovan last night after he was just collapsed on the court after the loss. And you could hear the emotion in Murray's voice and also the fact that he didn't know they had a play on Thursday in this interview.
They put it all on the line and gave everything they had. That's the news from the bubble.
News from the NBA bubble.
Bubble news.
Yeah. Bubble news.
Back to the drawing board.
I mean, and when you think of Jamal Murray, 17 for 24, 9 for 12 threes. Are you kidding me? No defense could have stopped the way he was shooting, spacing the floor tonight. That's just a grown man game. And you can tell by the names he's put himself up with. Oh, man, 2 50-point games in this series.
Check out his last three quarters, 21, 16, and 21. Those are quarters in the fourth, Jerry Greenberg. You got a star on your hands.
Certainly do. Jamal Murray, your coach told us before the game that this week has been an emotional roller coaster. How did you carry over the momentum from an explosive game four, game five, and then put everything else aside that happened this week and go out and drop 50 in a must-win game tonight?
Got a way to win. These shoes mean a lot. With all the shoes mean a lot.
Take a deep breath, Jamal. You were outstanding tonight. We understand that these are tough times. Jamal, what are you thinking about right now?
I just want to win. And in life, you find things that hold value to you and things to fight for. And we found something worth fighting for as an NBA, as a collective unit. And I usually choose as a symbol to me to keep fighting all around the world. So like I said, they give me a lot of power to keep fighting, and we want to win. I show my emotion, it comes out, so.
You have a picture of George Floyd on your right shoe here. You got Breonna Taylor. Why has this been so personal for you, Jamal?
Because it's not just in America. It happens everywhere. And for us to come together at the NBA, and, you know, it doesn't take one meeting. It takes a couple meetings, a few meetings. It takes phone calls. It takes persistence. It's not going to take one night. And we've been trying to fight for 400 years. But these shoes give me life. Even though these people are gone, they give me life. They give me, they help me find strength to keep fighting this world. That's what I'm keep doing.
You're a special person, Jamal Murray, on and off the court. Congratulations.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for all you did. There's a lot of people, BA and C-Web, that are proud of Jamal Murray all around North America tonight.
Yeah, that was something else. I mean, he pulled it together, and on a night when he could just talk about all of his greatness, he goes right back.
For our first story, we want to talk about when the NBA bubble burst, how it all went down, and what was accomplished. Last week, we went in depth about our thoughts and our feelings about why the guys stepped away from the season, and now we want to go behind the scenes of what exactly took place.
For those of you who may not know the details, the league office, the teams, and the owners were all caught off guard by the Milwaukee Bucks decision. When the Milwaukee players who live and work less than an hour from the scene of Kenosha, Wisconsin, shootings and protests, all who themselves have experienced various levels of police brutality, appeared to have felt an urge to act immediately and have a long-lasting impact.
So yeah, I think they didn't come out of the locker room. Obviously, we covered last week that they decided to boycott the game, but behind the scenes, no other teams were aware of their decision at the time, not even the Orlando Magic, who went to warm up, and they were going to forfeit the game, meaning that they would accumulate a loss to the Orlando Magic in their series and a loss for not participating in the game. When the Magic heard of it, they also felt strongly and wanted to participate in the boycott,
and it rippled throughout the league. The Bucks, however, did not just not come out of the locker room. What they were doing in the locker room was figuring out ways that they can achieve change. Most notably, the Bucks players spoke by phone to Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Cowell and Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. They also gave a statement urging the Wisconsin legislature to reconvene and consider bills on policing reform, which they did get the state legislature to reconvene.
As we've seen, Telly, and you know, we've been watching the news pretty closely over the last couple of weeks. NBA owners are, of course, wealthy and influential people, and it's been interesting to see them tweeting and sort of outwardly giving their support for police reform. We've seen even the Trump Education Secretary Betsy DeVos and her family, who own the Orlando Magic, put out a statement condemning bigotry, racial injustice, and unwarranted use of violence by police against people of color. And even, you know, we saw the day after the walkout, the Houston Rockets announced that their arena was going to be used for early in-person voting. And we've seen other venues and cities across the country start to use this as well. We saw the Dodgers came out and made a statement saying that Dodger Stadium was going to be usable. And I think there are various sports venues who are owned by the teams that are going to be used as polling places and you know, early voting locations as well. All of that seems to be happening, but it can't be ignored that this news came sort of right after Houston made the first move. And we can't ignore that, you know, the players had a very, very integral part in pushing teams and owners to take concrete action in response to the grievances and the injustices they've seen in their own communities.
What was interesting was they really didn't let the owners know about it. I saw an interview on CNBC by the Milwaukee Bucks owner, Mark Lazary, and he said he didn't know until about a minute or 2 minutes before game time, but that he encouraged his players, he stood by his players, and he was willing to lend a helping hand and resources wherever he could, which included, like you mentioned, opening up the Fiserv Arena for voting. The players didn't initially have a plan, right? They felt strongly, they wanted to boycott, and they started to call ownership and talk to different people in positions of power to ask for advice on kind of what to do. Michael Jordan was really instrumental in this. Michael Jordan, as some of you, most of you know, because we've discussed him a number of times on the pod in different episodes, is the owner of the Charlotte Hornets. So he's the only Black majority owner in the league, in all leagues, actually. Reached out to the National Basketball Players Association president, which is Chris Paul, in advance of the owners' meeting so that he could get a better understanding of exactly what the players wanted to achieve going forward, and so he can offer his assistance. So he wanted to build a bridge between the players so he could communicate to the Board of Governors, is what the NBA calls their owners. The NBA Board of Governors meeting, he can tell them, look, this is what the players want. This is how they're trying to communicate it. And this is the plan. And this is how we can help as owners. Michael also spoke with Houston Rockets star Russell Westbrook about issues of social injustice that initially left some stars advocating for the cancellation of the season. Jordan felt that it was best for them to continue with the season, to continue to have the platform. And so he did want to talk to guys who wanted to outright cancel the season, as well as talk to guys who were leaning in the other direction.
You know, Jordan had those conversations. And of course, some of our leaders in the NBA also reached out to President Obama, who kind of said the same thing. Stop, have a conversation, take a break. You know, go over, make sure the dialogue begins, and then use this as an opportunity and a platform to keep moving forward in the right direction. But with that in mind, you know, the owners last Thursday had a virtual meeting, and two participants of that meeting did confirm that, you know, those conversations that Jordan had with the players definitely translated. So Michael Jordan does serve as the NBA Labor Relations Committee chairman. So he was pretty much the voice of the players with the owners, and he urged that the owners allow the players to kind of express their frustrations and concerns before really offering solutions. I think you and I would agree across the board that at times like this, you need to just have a space to share what you're feeling, and you're not looking for immediate solutions or, hey, this is what we need to do. More of just like, listen to me, let me be heard, let me process things, and we can kind of work together. And so what Jordan told the ownership group was, you know, right now, listening is better than talking. And it looks like that was sort of what set the tone and kind of got the entire conversation moving in the direction that the players are hoping it would go.
One of the questions in that interview I saw with Mark Lazary that was asked of him was, do you feel like the players are boycotting against the owners, against the NBA? And he said he didn't feel that at all, that it was a partnership. And I think Jordan really solidified that partnership of like, hey, the owners and the NBA are here to support the players, support this cause, support this movement and moving it forward. And you and I have talked before on the podcast, Ahmed, about how the NBA is light years ahead of the other leagues in terms of support from the commissioner's office, support from ownership, support from management, diversity initiatives, and getting the message out about injustices, you know, in this country.
Really, when you look at the NBA and the players' union, I think there's definitely a significantly better relationship, although I'm still hearing things of a lockout after the end of the season as they look at labor negotiations. But I think when it comes to at least the commissioner's office and the players, I think they're definitely light years ahead of the other leagues in terms of how they're communicating and how they're taking action on the court and off the court.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of the resolve is coming from efforts that will take place off the court, which is really what the guys wanted to see. And the argument that we mentioned to you guys in the past versus playing, which would bring a distraction away from social injustice in the country and people would be focused on games and who's going to win the championship, versus not playing and allowing these things to kind of air out a little bit and people to pay full attention to the social injustices going on in the country without the distraction of sports. So as we had last week, a very special episode where Ahmed and I both discussed our feelings with the current climate environment, the shooting of Jacob Blake, we wanted to read this statement in full because we felt it was just that important to get all the information and lay it out correctly. So I'll start here. This is a joint statement that was put out by the NBA and the NBA Players Association as the resolve of the players' lockout, which took place last week. And it goes, quote, "We had a candid, impassioned, and productive conversation yesterday between NBA players, coaches, and team governors regarding next steps to further our collective efforts and actions in support of social justice and racial equality. Among others, the attendees included player and team representatives of all 13 teams in Orlando. All parties agreed to resume NBA playoff games on Saturday, August 29th, with the understanding that the league, together with the players, will work to enact the following commitments." And there's three here. Number one, the NBA and its players have agreed to immediately establish a social justice coalition with representatives from players, coaches, and governors that will be focused on a broad range of issues, including increasing access to voting, promoting civic engagement, and advocating for meaningful police and criminal justice reform. Number two, in every city where the league franchise owns and controls the arena property, team governors will continue to work with local election officials to convert the facility into a voting location for the 2020 general election to allow for a safe in-person voting option for communities vulnerable to COVID. If a deadline has passed, team governors will work with local election officials to find another election-related use for the facility, including but not limited to voter registration and ballot receiving boards. And number three, the league will work with the players and our network partners to create and include advertising spots in each NBA playoff game dedicated to promoting greater civic engagement in national and local elections and raising awareness around voter access and opportunity. These commitments follow months of close collaboration around designing a safe and healthy environment to restart the NBA season,
providing a platform to promote social justice, as well as creating an MBA foundation focused on economic empowerment in the Black community. We look forward to the resumption of the playoffs and continuing to work together in Orlando and in all NBA team markets to push for meaningful and sustainable change. And that sounds really similar, Amit, to what the NCAA guys, right, are asking for in the college situation that we talked about in BTN 22 a couple of episodes ago, about the college guys just want to have a voice. They just want to be included and they want to be able to affect change.
There's a lot there. I think it's pretty historic to see this level of action being taken by essentially, I mean, you could look at these teams as giant corporations in themselves, right? These are giant companies and conglomerates that are really stepping up. Now, I know it's a lot of talk right now, and I'm sure they've come up with a lot of concrete ideas, but it's interesting to see all of this happen right now. And it's, in some ways, as frustrating and sad and dark as it's been for the last couple of months, it's exciting to see the possibilities of what could be coming as all of this kind of plays out and kind of, you know, comes to be.
And keep in mind, too, that the governors, again, that's what NBA calls its ownership, comes from all different walks of life, you know, all different backgrounds and all different schools of thought, right? So they're not, it doesn't necessarily mean they're all aligned politically, but they're all aligning behind this movement that was really started by the players. And it says something that you're allowing your labor force, right, the players, the employees of the corporation, to dictate kind of your stance or what next steps you're going to take. And it allows the players to say, hey, we're being heard, and at least they're listening, and these are some concrete steps we can take. Are things going to change overnight? No. Can you change someone's heart, right, that believes or thinks a certain way? No. But these are concrete ways that we can affect change. And I think that goes down as a win, definitely, to that accomplishment. The other part of it is, if you're an ownership group, a governor or a team who doesn't support this or doesn't get on board, right, players will remember. They will be free agents. You will be a team trying to win. You will be a team trying to lure some of the top talent in the league. And as LeBron, Giannis, and other top talent in the league has stated, they are all united in Black Lives Matter. They are all united in creating social change for this country.
Yeah, and I don't know if you've been following, but Mark Cuban has been extremely vocal for the past couple of months even on a lot of this stuff. It's interesting to see him sort of come through and be very, 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 very point, very focused in his statements. It would be disingenuous if the action comes from a place of, if I do this, then these people will come to my team sort of deal. But to your point, I agree. Like, inaction in itself is an action that shows, okay, you don't care about me, why should I come care about you?
Especially in today's climate. So with that being said, as a final thought here, we want to leave you guys with Chris Webber's words, his reaction immediately following the walkout last week, his support of the players, and if not now, when?
For no change tomorrow. We know vote. We keep hearing vote. Everybody vote. But I'm here to speak for those that are always marginalized. Those that live in these neighborhoods where we preach and tell them to vote and walk away. Charles Barkley came to my high school. Just seeing him in the locker room, seeing his hands and his body, that inspired me. You can't see something. You can't be something until you see it. And when I tell you the little kids that have called me upset, I have a godson that has autism, and I just had to explain to him why we aren't playing. I have young nephews that I've had to talk to about death before they've even seen it in a movie. If not now, when? If not during a pandemic and countless lives being lost, if not now, when? That's all I just want to hear from rest of the night while everybody's pontificating and thinking and soapboxing and all of that. We know nothing is going to change. We get it. If Martin Luther King got shot and risked his life, Mega Evers, if we've seen this and all of our heroes constantly taken down, we understand it's not going to end. But that does not mean, young men, that you don't do anything. Don't listen to these people telling you don't do anything because it's not going to end right away. You are starting something for the next generation and the next generation to take over. Do you have to be smart? Yes. Do you have to make sure that you have a plan? Yes. Do you have to be articulate about that plan? Yes. All of those things. But that's what you're going to do. They're professionals. They know how to be the best of themselves. And so I applaud it. I applaud it because it is the young people. It is the young people leading the way. And I applaud them.
Stan Van Gundy.
All right, let's wrap this thing up. We brought you news from the bubble. Now that families can reunite and some of the epic battles we've gotten to witness throughout these playoffs. And lastly,
we talked about the accomplishments of the NBA boycott following the shooting of Jacob Blake, turning stadiums into polling stations for the election to serve underserved communities.
Thank you for going beyond the numbers with us. We're a weekly podcast dedicated to going beyond the numbers of sports and life to bring you the story within the story of the stories that matter. We're available on all major podcasting platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. Whatever you're listening on now, please be sure to click the follow or subscribe button to get our latest content.
And remember, you can find us on Instagram, Beyond the Numbers Podcast, and on Twitter, at Beyond TN Podcast.
Until next time,
peace.